It's great to speak with you today, and thank you in advance for taking the time to share your thoughts and experiences as we collectively prepare for the future of philanthropic action and the various strategic dimensions relevant to maximizing impact. Dr. Mads Krogsgaard Thomsen is a son of Denmark and the former head of R&D and CSO, the chief scientific officer of the global healthcare company Novo Nordisk, which was founded in 1923 and is headquartered in Denmark. As a leading pharmacologist, Mads was responsible for the research and development of 20 medical products and spearheaded the optimization of insulin analogs that helped Novo Nordisk remain as a top diabetes business with exports to over 180 countries. Mass weathered the biopharmaceutical industry's many waves of change and disruptive mergers and acquisitions for over two decades, and has recently assumed the role of CEO of Novo Nordisk Foundation in March 2021. The Novo Nordisk Foundation is the largest endowment in the world, with a net worth of well over $70 billion, and operates as an independent foundation that's focused on supporting scientific, humanitarian, and social causes, including across many of the so-called emerging markets, as well as the overall sustainability of the Novo Group. Throughout Mass's decorated career, in academia and business, he served on more than a few prestigious boards, including the Technical University of Denmark, Solartis, Symphogen, and BB Biotech. He also chaired the boards of the University of Copenhagen and the Steno Diabetes Center. Dear Mads, earlier this year, you took over the role of CEO of Novo Nordisk Foundation, after many years on the business side of Novo Nordisk. Congratulations. As you embark on this new role in an independent foundation that's proud of its corporate links, how important do you believe the nexus between business and philanthropic capital is?
Well, first of all, I think it's very important. You mentioned yourself the development of insulin analogs that have made pharmacotherapy within diabetes more convenient and more safe and more efficacious. And I actually believe that the benefit of owning, or at least partly owning, a company that can invest in new technology while making the last generation technology available at very affordable prices throughout the world, and yet retain, you can say, surplus cash to invest in new innovation, I think there's a really good balance there. So we are now investing in giving back to society some of the profits from the operating companies in ways that actually, both within human healthcare, but also, I would say, global health and sustainability, are really meaningful. So it's been a jump from making just medicines to a more broad societal impact, which I find extremely rewarding.
Your distinguished career spans an impressive track record in the field of medical research, and the Novo Nordisk Foundation has been very active in the ongoing fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. You donated many millions of dollars for COVID-related measures, test centers, and funded research trials for anti-inflammatory drugs. Do you think the pandemic is changing people's perception of the role of private philanthropic capital in helping communities respond to this sort of emergency?
Yes, I think at least from where I'm coming in Little Denmark, public-private partnerships, including those with the philanthropy, have really been now on the radar screen in a positive way among, for instance, the political establishment. So both the philanthropy, where the Nordisk Foundation funded many test centers throughout Denmark for COVID-19 testing, but also the operating company actually developed the technology, the PCR technology, that was then used nationwide. It's really an example of philanthropy, the public system, and even the operating companies coming together in a way that has created, I think, a more justified and good image of what it actually is we are able to do in our side of, you can say, the business of the world.
Emerging markets occupy the top 30 list of the fastest growing economies in the world, and the majority of new wealth is being generated within these regions, including across parts of Africa, the Middle East, and developing Asia. As a European organization deeply engaged in many of these markets, have you observed the nature and attitudes of philanthropy changing in these regions of the world over time? And if so, what do you believe are the main drivers of this change?
Well, first of all, it's a very good point you're making that these emerging market economies, due to their relatively very strong growth, it suddenly, first of all, becomes more feasible to do meaningful philanthropy because infrastructure is built, education and healthcare is enhanced, and suddenly it becomes possible to do things where, for instance, diseases get diagnosed and can get meaningful treatment. It also becomes easier to help when there's unrest in the country as they become more and more established economies with the possibility also to make sure that your money and your funding and your support goes to the correct places, so to speak. So I've during my 30 years tenure at Nunas, I've witnessed that our ability as a company, but also now in the foundation, to operate more broadly in these countries, in these emerging markets, has expanded vastly, in particular also over the last decade or so. So it's important actually to reach out early on and make, you know, for instance, pharmacotherapies affordable at a point and accessible at a point in time where they're very immature. And then over time, the societies mature due to financial growth and strength, and suddenly they can also become an integral part of the more modern healthcare systems that we know from the Western world. So I've seen that happening, and we've tried to contribute also via the World Diabetes Foundation and so on, the best that we could.
Your work at the foundation is closely tied to data and evidence-informed grant giving. In your view, Mas, how can we ensure that this new generation of philanthropists across these growth markets, but globally really, have access to the tools and knowledge that they will need to maximize their impact?
I think that is a very important question because to me, everything has to be evidence-based as we roll out things. So if you take a thing like bioagriculture, the ability to not have to cut down the Amazonas or to have to use all water for watering purposes on the fields, but by actually having healthier crops in a biologically reasonable way and so on and so forth, that is an example of a thing we need to do data-based. I can mention many others. So even though we can do wonderful philanthropy in Denmark and show that it works here in our little kingdom, it's actually important to have the evidence base to show that when research points to new ways of farming, doing agriculture, whatever it may be, they also have to prove themselves out there in the local environments. And this is why we're extremely evidence-based, and we even would like to share data. So when we talk to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, and so on, we actually are preoccupied by the idea of sharing data so that we can generate more knowledge together and also avoid that we duplicate efforts of each other.
Yeah, that's so important. And we're seeing that, with so many of the conversations we're having, that seems to be a common theme that's coming out, which I think is very promising. As a sort of follow-on question, how is technology, broadly speaking, and innovation changing philanthropy to meet unfulfilled healthcare needs in the regions that you're active in?
So for us, it has changed quite a lot, technology, because over the past years, a couple of things have become painfully evident. One is the global climate change that will actually also hit some of the emerging markets rather hard if we don't act against them now. But in general, technologies have emerged over the last decade that make a lot of the previous insights on the human genome, on the genome of plants, on whatever it may be, carbon capture and so on, things have become more accessible to scaling up to industrial scale so that we're starting to be able also to use, for instance, high-performance computing, maybe even quantum computing in modeling of the future weather forecast of the global climate, in the future ability to understand microbiome populations in our guts and so on. We today don't have the computational power to make all the technologies really reach their max potential. But we are emerging with these technologies, both in the climate area, in human health, in computing, that will help us get there, I think, by around 2030. So we are investing rather heavily in some of these technologies by creating research centers that are dedicated either to bioagriculture, to quantum computing, to carbon emission, carbon capture, and things like that.
Novonordisk has long been open to partnerships. You just talked about that. And I guess with the objective of ensuring equitable access to healthcare within the WHO framework. As we embark on this decade of delivery that we just talked about to meet the world's SDGs, do you believe that the pandemic will have a lasting impact on how people think about the imperative for multi-stakeholder collaboration and true partnerships?
I hope so. I sincerely hope so, because what has been painfully evident also during the pandemic is that just like we have built a network within a non-communicable disease called type 2 diabetes, in many emerging markets of the world, making infrastructure activities possible such that you know, remedies and therapies can get out to the population. We've seen during COVID-19 that, and the WHO can testify to this, that just getting the vaccines out there and do the job of vaccinating local populations has been a huge dilemma, and very often the data infrastructure and the logistics have simply not been in place. So there's a lot of ongoing efforts between WHO and the UN system and some of the big foundations and trusts to try to actually make ourselves more prepared for the next round. And luckily, we now have the technologies. Talking about technology, the mRNA technology has actually, and a couple of others, have actually revolutionized our ability to counteract pandemics like COVID-19 in a way that is unforeseen. Now we just need to get the global outreach and systems up and running in a way that we're better prepared next time.
So final question, if I may. Is there an ideal or optimal role for private philanthropy in the field of medical research? And for philanthropists who might be watching this, who are interested in focusing their efforts in this field, what advice would you give them?
I think that's a huge place, because in all honesty, if you take the private companies, the pharmaceutical industry, they are very often focused on the more established paradigms, and universities are not really focused on translating basic research into applied science. So I think one of the roles that private philanthropy can play, and Novo Nordisk Foundation is playing in a big scale through a number of research centers at universities already today, is to bridge, you can say, from basic research through translation into something that can become remedies of the future, help both with the funding, but also with the translation into something that just doesn't become a publication in the Nature Journal or somewhere else, but actually moves all the way. So I think we can help the whole life science ecosystem come together from the very early stages of basic research to the later stages of applied research translation and even into the marketplace by facilitating and catalyzing that this whole value chain is you know, passed through.
That's great advice that I'm sure many will make good use of. Thank you, Mads, for all the phenomenally important work that you continue to do. And of course, for taking the time to share your great insights with us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.